Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. It's so nice to have you joining us at the kitchen table today, and I am especially excited to have Miss Michelle York back with us again because you've been gone for a while. Anyway, how you been, huh?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
Look, you got a lot on your plate there. Got a lot of little stuff in front of
I got a lot on my plate right now. No. We have been out, and I'm just trying to catch up a little bit.
Trying to catch up, huh?
Well, you're keeping me way busy these days.
That's my style, baby. That's my style.
I know.
No grass will ever grow on our foot, as they say.
My feet getting kind of dusty, though.
Across the glass wall, we have our engineer keeping us alive and well, the sound balance, music dynamic. We have the Slum over there. Dean Slum, how are you doing?
Hey, Chef, I'm doing all right. Y'all been staying away together.
I know. We've been staying away together, huh?
Yeah, and we survived.
Huh? What y'all been
we survived with, each other's company.
Well, in order for us to survive together away, we need a large entourage with us.
Of course.
Yeah, that way there's a lot of distraction. You know what I mean? Because I love her to death, right, Slama?
Right, yeah.
But she can be a handful.
You know, I love him to death, but he can be a handful, too.
She's like having triplets. She's like having triplets. That's all
like
I
having say. A two-year-old.
Well, with that, how you doing today?
I'm good. Feeling a little crabby.
Yeah, you're feeling a little crabby,
yeah.
Today, huh? Well, I mean, that
happens this time of year.
I didn't really notice it, you know, because I've been exceptionally easy to deal with lately. So by being crabby, you saying that, I took a negative note there.
You did? Yeah. Oh, I don't know why.
Well, you're talking about crabby, though, I tell you what, you must be referring this time of year to those gorgeous, those beautiful, those unbelievably large, those super fat, full of roll, gorgeous blue crabs that's in season right now. I'm going to tell you what, like Daddy used to say, you know, my dad had a tendency to exaggerate a little bit.
Is that where you got it? It's amazing how some things like that are in the gene pool.
My dad would say, I caught a crab today so big we needed a truck to carry. I couldn't even put it in with the other small ones. They were only 12 inches from point to point. That was the small. But anyway, let me tell you what. I went into a market the other day. The crabs were so absolutely beautiful. I got me six of them. And
six.
For the first time in my life, I could only eat four at a time.
I don't believe
I'm telling you the truth. The smallest one, I'm not kidding you, was about 8 inches from point to point. And when you crack that shell open, the yellow, rich, luscious fat inside. And the females had that beautiful roe inside. Oh, my God. I don't even need the meat when I see that. I bring that crab up to my mouth, and I just kind of...
And he's not kidding about that part. He's the only man I know that cracks crab claws with his teeth.
You know why? Because in my house of eight kids at the Falls family, at the ranch.
The ranch.
At the ranch.
The Falls
where
ranch,
we grew up. Yeah, we were
the fenced. Compound.
We were fenced in at the ranch. Mm-hmm. We had one cracker, which was a hammer. And they had eight children around the table, and there were seven crabs.
You got to improvise.
There were seven crabs, eight kids, one hammer. So if you were going to eat crabs, you better crack it with your teeth and keep moving. otherwise, you'd be playing around. You know, today when I watch people with their little silver picks and all that kind of stuff,
Wasting time.
No. You got to know how to break the joint off of the middle of the claw so that when you crack the front off and suck, it comes out because there's nothing holding it in the joint. You see, Michelle, these are techniques you learn.
And that you have perfected.
And a house of depravity. Yeah. You learn a lot of tricks, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the crabs, Michelle, are just magnificent. You like crabs?
Of course I do, and that's what I mean when I say I'm kind of crabby today, because it is crab season, and it is so amazing. You're talking about the color, how God colors his creatures so beautifully. Crabs are kind of like the bluebirds of the water.
That's a good point.
Deep ocean blue colored legs and their little paddles, you know, blending into aquamarine, I'll say, to azure blue. You know, the scientific name translates into Latin as beautiful swimmer.
Beautiful swimmer. I remember reading that at one time, the number of varieties of crabs.
That's right. And you can always tell a mature female crab, and you taught me this.
That's right, I did.
By the bright red fingertips on her claws.
That's right. We always said that. It's a, because everybody wants to turn a crab over to see whether the apron was wide, like a female that holds the eggs there, or whether it was narrow, like a male. And Daddy said, oh, y'all wasting your time. Just look, the female always has her fingernails painted red. Anyway, yeah, you're right about that, and I'm really sentimental about color myself. In fact, Slama, I love red, that bright, beautiful red that comes about when you throw them into a boiling pot. You know what I mean? I love that color, you know what I mean? The hard part is waiting for them to cool down enough to dig into them. It's a waiting game that you're balancing that hot crab in your hand, because you know when you pop it open, I mean, you want to be able to handle it.
That's right.
And plus, if it's too hot when you pop it open, that yellow fat just kind of runs with the water, and you don't want to miss that. You know what I mean? That's why often I like a cold crab, too, because all of that solidifies, you know?
Do you have enough newspapers to kind of catch all the trimmings? I've been saving up.
Oh, you saving up newspapers.
I've been saving up so I can spread my newspapers nicely over a big table.
Well,
first crab.
Well, at least I know where to get newspaper
you
from.
You want my newspaper.
Most of the Gulf Coast, I think, feels the same way that Michelle and I feel. What about you, Slime? You like crabs?
Yeah, I do the snow crab when I eat my sushi.
See what I'm talking about? Snow crab.
Snow crab.
That's sacrilegious. Only this time of year I'm talking about. Gosh, I love snow crab, too. Well, you know, talking about snow crab or the Dungeness crab. Most people don't realize that there's many, many varieties of crabs, thousands actually of crabs. And when you talk about people fishing them, 3,000 crab fishermen in Louisiana alone, bringing in a harvest of somewhere about 40 million pounds. Now, that's an unbelievable number.
That's a lot of crab meat.
That's a lot of crab meat. This is up from about 1 million pounds back in the 1920s when, you know, people first started to record, and I'm sure the technique of fishing has improved so much. By the way, that included soft-shell crab catch as well. And, of course, soft-shell crab, when you talk about catch, in those days, you had to watch for what they call those busters, you know, those that were coming out of the shell.
Busting out of the shell?
Yeah, and you had to catch those on the marsh bank on the side. Today, of course, we have a better technique. In 1924, in response to the commercial fishing boom, Morgan City built the first processing plant, or as they called it, the crab factory. Mm-hmm. The crab factory. Before that, crabs were shipped by water. Think about that. A big container full of water with crabs in it, shipped by water to New Orleans to be sold to restaurant owners, steamboat operators. You can imagine that big old wagon of water full of crabs going down the highway to New Orleans. Yeah, a lot of sloshing. That's right.
You know, I found it really interesting that the catch of hard-shell crabs actually peaked in 1945.
War years, girl.
War years, in response to demand during World War II. 31 million pounds were landed and about 2.4 million pounds of soft shells. It wasn't until about 40 years later, 1986, that crab fishermen broke that hard shell crab record. And you know that 2.4 million pounds of soft shells, that record has never since reached that peak since World War II.
Even this year, I mean, one of the big discussions, where are the soft shells? Because most people are just doing soft shell through aquaculture nowadays, which is a whole different story. You know, Louisiana was one of the earliest crab fisheries in the country. And to our credit, in 2012, we received, finally, 2012, the stamp of approval as a sustainable fishery from the Marine Stewardship Council, which means that crabs are here to stay, thank God. The practices of raising and fishing are such that we know we can sustain that industry. The stewardship is an international nonprofit organization that investigates the ecological practices of fisheries, as I mentioned, to make sure, and Louisiana got an excellent rating for that, which is good, because a lot of times people think of Louisianians as going out and overfishing everything, and look at the redfish a few years ago. But crabs are here to stay.
Well, and you know, Louisiana actually provides about 30% of the U.S. blue crab landings, 30% for the nation, at about 50 million pounds a year on average.
I would have never believed that.
More than half of these crabs are harvested primarily from two areas, the lakes and marshes of Lake Pontchartrain and the Terrebonne Basin.
Wow. Because when you hear about Lake Maurepas, which of course is an extension of Pontchartrain, you think of some of your best crabs, your Lake Maurepas crab, but there's also Lake Desalman crabs. Anyway, y'all, the industry has gone through a lot of changes, though, as a result of the surge in imported crab meat and naturally higher labor costs. In 2009, a petition was filed to restrict crab meat imports, but unfortunately it failed. And after that, about two-thirds of the crab factories in Louisiana closed shop.
Point of origin is so critical.
Point of origin is really
for Louisiana
seafood.
Yeah,
we need to know where the food is coming from by Louisiana first. Another hit to the industry has been, of course, that ever-rising nemesis called fuel costs. As a result, commercial crab fishermen are now focused more on bringing in the large crabs that command that higher price than the smaller factory crabs, you know, that they're appealing. So the industry has changed, obviously, dramatically.
But crab meat is always in high demand, and the soft shells, of course, have a very short run. Generally, by late winter, only the busters are available, but they are perfect for those soft shell crab po' boys, and
they're
you can get them by the pound or by
they're
the
just,
dozen.
They're just perfect. You can stop there. Y'all, on the mid-Atlantic coast where blue crabs are also plentiful, crabs are steamed rather than boiled. It's the seasoning.
Sacrilege.
Yeah, well, they put the seasoning on the outside. This Chesapeake Bay or Old Bay seasoning has been a tradition since the 1930s where you steam the crabs in a big pot of water, then you sprinkle them on the table with all of this Chesapeake Bay or Old Bay seasoning, which is really a nice flavor. It's an interesting twist. The difference in the boiled crabs is that they're boiled in a big pot of lusciously seasoned water, and when you crack that crab open, all that liquid is inside to suck out of the claws, whereas in steamed, you won't have that. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, what's sacrilegious about it is that most of them are eating Louisiana crabs up there.
I know. Don't even get me
huge
started.
Huge market for Louisiana crabs in the Northeast.
Oh, of course, the best crabs in Chesapeake Bay are from us. Well, y'all know what we're talking about. As delicious as our Gulf Coast crab cakes taste, it's like the saying, anything they can do, we can do better. No doubt about it. The seasoning is right here in the South. Anyway, Dean's telling me it's time to take a break. So, y'all, we're backing up just like the crabs do. And we're going to see you in just a minute with a guy who knows more about crabs than anybody else I know. Be back in a minute.
Out from the sea came a little green crab, taking the sun, the morning being very bad. Oh, rusty cans, pebbles bedded in the sand, stand and stare.
Greetings, I'm Jake Abair.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best food and culture show on radio. It's so nice to have all of you with us today. And Michelle, we are talking about our favorite subject. We're talking about those delicious, those wonderful, those fat, those often not available to us. Blue crabs. And, of course, we have a great guest with us today. A good friend of ours, somebody who we've really been close to lately. And I want you to give him a proper introduction.
Today we do have our very good friend, Frank Randall, of Randall's Cajun Restaurant in Lafayette. Now, I know you and Frank have known each other for years.
Well, let me say this. I have to admit, Frank and I knew each other for years, but we've only really gotten to know each other. In fact, I went to his restaurant, and he's got this magnificent place over on Kelly Saloon Road in Lafayette. He took an airplane hangar, is what he did, because he's a pilot, and turned it into this magnificent Cajun dance hall and restaurant. And I walked into this thing, and I said, you know, I like this guy. That's what I said.
Well, Frank is a newly appointed member of the Louisiana Seafood Promotion and Marketing Board. So y'all serve on that together. Frank is a native of Louisiana, and in his own words, he said, my feet have been in the water almost from birth. He got his start in the business after graduating college, after serving in the Army. He started flying. You just mentioned he's a pilot. He started flying fresh crabs out of Louisiana up the East Coast.
So he's the culprit who did that.
He's the one. He's exporting all our good crabs.
I'm thinking of him as my best friend, and now I find out that's where the crabs are going with Frank.
These crabs came from Vermilion Bay, where he and his grandfather used to fish at their summer home. He eventually set up his own crab processing plant in Henderson for the wholesale market. Then in 79, Frank opened Randall's in Lafayette. As you were mentioning, great place for food, great dance music. His processing plant is now located there, and it also handles crawfish. Frank and his staff were invaluable during the rough time of Katrina and Rita when those hurricanes hit. He helped feed the rescuers and all those handling restoration efforts along the Gulf Coast. Frank's son has actually followed in his footsteps, and he's been working in the business for the past 13 years, which really proves that the seafood business in Louisiana is generational, and it's completely a wonderful way of life. So, Frank, thank you for being with us today, and welcome to Stirring It Up.
Perfect. Thanks. It's a pleasure being with y'all. And Michelle, I like you too. I love both of you guys. And we're throwing the people off with the last name Randall. My middle name is my mother's family name, which is Beaulieu. So I'm deep rooted in the Cajun culture of South Louisiana.
I'll say.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody in the world who doesn't know that you're very deeply rooted in Louisiana. Anyway, Frank, it's so good to have you with us. I called you a couple of weeks ago for your birthday, and I sang happy birthday to you. I mean, that's love. When I pick up the phone and call my buddy.
It's what? Love when I just say happy birthday. Yeah, and not sing.
But
no one heard you sing. No one heard you sing. But I can tell you, I don't know if it was the glee club or the church choir. It was right on. Great job.
But now you're telling me today, he said, I think it's my anniversary. I think you know it's your anniversary.
Yes, indeed. Happy anniversary.
Thank you for Kathy.
Anyway, Frank, it's so nice to hear your voice. Michelle was saying you and I have known each other forever. We've certainly known of each other forever, but it's only been recently that we've worked together and had an opportunity to visit each other and all of that. And let me tell you what a pleasure that has been, and to all of our listeners who tune in to Stirring It Up every Saturday. Let me tell you something. I have a great new friend here in Frank, and I appreciate all of your great efforts for seafood, all of your life and your family's life in Louisiana. So know how much I appreciate you.
I appreciate you also. It's at that point in our lives where you come back and reflect back, but tell you what, it's a great connect.
Well, you know, you and I have been really busy working lately on the Louisiana Seafood Promotion and Marketing Board, where dollars are expended to promote Louisiana's incredible seafood industry in trying times. And we want to definitely talk about that. But first and foremost, I want our listeners to know what I know about you, and that is that you're a great Louisianian, a great businessman, totally engulfed in the seafood business. Tell us a little bit, not only about your start, your family life, where you grew up, and how you've emerged into your business now.
You know, basically, y'all hit it. You know, when I got out of college back in the 60s, we were all faced with military service. I went into the Army, and then out on the backside of the Army, I was just quandering whether I'd go into the family business, which is basically insurance and real estate, or I'd try to veer off and do my own thing. flying was my passion. I was flying at an early age. And the easiest thing that came up that made sense was either flying Flowers to California or seafood to Baltimore, Maryland. Baltimore won out. The rest is history.
Do you still fly, Frank?
Yes, I do. And I'm flying through my extension now. You know, I fly basically in good weather. My sons are accomplished pilots, both of them. My oldest son actually flies international for what we call carpet flying. He flies around the world in a very large aircraft, and he makes a living at it. My second son works in the business with me, but he's also a pilot with good potential, and I'm just what you call a fair weather guy. I'm at the age now where I enjoy flying.
Frank, getting back to the industry of seafood, we hear a lot today about the trials and tribulations of this business, that it's a tough business. It's obviously seasonal. We're dealing with the elements every single day, and the fishing families of this country, and especially Louisiana, are always on the tip of some emergency or some crisis. How do people in this industry sustain? How have you sustained over the years to live in an industry of, I say, uncertainty, that you're dealing with things that you do not control? That must be tremendously, tremendously frustrating for our Louisiana fishermen.
I sort of address it sort of like I do anything else. You know, we live in the present. We look forward to growth in the future, but we actually try to chart our path through the past. I think the fisheries are the same way. And in my case, you know, I've been in business or been associated with the fisheries for 40 years. We've gone through these cycles. They're 7 to 10 year cycles, and at some point, you're going to see something that sort of is similar to what we're experiencing right now. And right now, basically in the 90s, we went through a slump in the crab business, just like what I think we're experiencing now. And it's not just here in Louisiana; it appears to be the East Coast as well as the Gulf. We're off to a slow start. My guess was we're running about 2 months late. We had an exceptionally cool spring that was prolonged. We know the rivers are still high with the seasonal thaw coming down the Mississippi. And all you have to do is look, we still have crawfish. We're going to have crawfish all the way through the month of August. And we have that, wow. They're talking about a dead zone out the Gulf of Mexico. You know, everything's a little soft right now. We have a depression out in the Caribbean. But all these things, we don't panic. We just realize that this is a part of Mother Nature. There's a cause and effect. We know that there's a bright spot on the backside of the event. So we look forward to the things improving, and we know we're going to live through it.
Now, that's really a good synopsis of what it's all about. Now, you've been doing this for quite a while. How did you first determine, you were mentioning that flying may have been an industry for you, may have been in real estate, but you made a decision when you did have options to get into the seafood business, which you just mentioned is can be tentative. So what was that decision? What made you say this is going to be a good life for me and my family, and how is it proven to be that?
I think it's just bon chance. I think it was just the luck of the draw. I actually, with my own aircraft, when we started flying the first couple loads out, we had chewed up so much capital that I realized, you know, it was just like, I guess, gambling. Only way for me to realize and chart a course to get that back was to actually get more into the business. So I was flying an aircraft, a vintage, what we call D-18 Tweed Twin Beach. It was World War II vintage, and I could put about 3,000 pounds of cargo in it. And I'd fly from Lafayette to Baltimore, refueling up in Knoxville. But what we wound up doing was actually swinging back and putting it on Delta Airlines. Because it was easier, because the aircraft I owned, the unknowns were all the mechanical issues that we had. And so I went to Delta, and I actually was in the 70s. I was their largest shipper out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Wow.
And that was it. And that's what drove me to that decision. It was really good back then because, you know, with all the security we have today, but realized that back in the 70s, I could back my truck to the belly of the jet and load it in 30 minutes. Put 5,000 pounds in the nose of a DC-9 jet. But after 9/11, you had to pre-book the flight, arrive 2 hours out before departure. And it led to what I do today, which is UPS delivery door-to-door, and I don't fight the airlines anymore.
Now, when I toured your facility just recently, and I have to tell our public. I mean, I was astounded. I mean, I'm in the food business as well. But, you know, everything for me is, you know, I can plan a couple of weeks out. I'm not depending on somebody bringing raw material to my back door. My raw material is coming 18-wheeler that's been pre-ordered. We know it's coming in. It's dry goods. It's, you're dealing with an industry that you have an order, you have people that's ready to work, and then all of a sudden, I don't know, the weather changes or something happens. When I look at your place and see that, it's almost like poetry in motion as people are, somebody's cooking, somebody's delivering to the tables, huge numbers of people peeling and this and that. No, I mean, it was really remarkable, I have to say, how smooth this operation was. What is your greatest challenge in the season working with shipping, working with weather, working with people issues? Do things normally run fairly smooth in that? I mean, it seems that it would be a whole lot of management.
When you classify the in the fishery, we classify it as wild caught. I call it wild ride. You know, when you, the variable. So, you know, at the beginning, what we had was trying to figure out where to sell the stuff. And that's not what we have today. Our challenges today, number one, is acquiring the raw product, but now it's labor. John, you and I know the fight that we have to try to secure the proper labor to be able to move forward. And that's been the biggest challenge. We've shrunk back. You know, we used to be a lot larger, but we realized that rather than going after the larger volume, I realized the sustainability of the fisheries was the number one thing for us to focus on. So we focus on quality. Direct supply to high-end restaurants and grocery chains, and that's been facilitated. We just seek out those people that realize that their basic objectives match ours. So that's been our focus, I'd say, for the last decade, would be to reposition or realign our efforts that way.
Frank, how many pounds of crab meat would you say that y'all process in a year at your plant in Lafayette, realizing it, I'm sure it differs year to year, but on average?
You know, we're a small plant. Our optimum capacity is about 500,000 pounds annually.
Oh, that's small. Okay.
That's a small piece.
Million pounds of meat.
Yeah. But last year production, to give you an idea, the optimum would be about, we can produce about 2,000 pounds of peel crawfish tail meat in a work shift in a day, which is basically 12,000 pounds of raw product. Which is about it's about a 250,000 each crawfish that would be peeled in that.
That's six tons. Wow.
Yeah. So the crab is about half that, and it's about 25,000 crabs is what our optimum production to go through. That's about what it comes out to.
What about the supply challenges? We talked about it a little bit just now, but you have your people sitting there. You're able to peel 25,000 crabs or 250,000 crawfish in that period of time you're talking about. Do you ever have all of those people sitting there and all of a sudden, well, supply isn't there or trucks isn't there or something that's happening that causes confusion? It certainly didn't seem that way when I was touring your facility. It looked like it was a very smooth operation.
You caught us on a good cycle. trying to get the supply is hard. You were there when we had the crossover from the farm raised to the wild caught, which was the basin. The crawfish was, we were actually doubled up. We were doing both. So we had a lot of production. We were peaking out. But under the crab, which is the issue now, we're having the wild caught, and there's a lot of competition for what we have because we know that Ponce Train's down right now. The East Coast is down. So all of a sudden, we have big trucks from Maryland sitting over here on the west side of Vermilion Bay all the way towards Texas, and then we got the Texas trucks on us. So we got a very small pond or area of product that would normally be comfortable that we would be able to process, but we've got everybody trying to go after that, and we just got three or four times the demand. The product's there, but it's not anywhere else. So we're struggling to keep the plant at where it needs to be. But we understand that it's going to settle out
It fluctuates. What's the most sought after? I mean, when you talk about the claw meat, and you talk about the white meat, you talk about the jumbo lump. I know you have it all in the crab, but what's the most sought after by clients?
John Foles. You know what that is.
Well, I know what it is. I know what it is. I know what it is.
Jumbo lump crab meat, man. There's only two of them in a male crab, 18% of the production. That's what they want, and they like what we do. We specialize. We try to get that sweet brackish water crab that produces that ultimate flavor. but there's only two of them lumps in the back, jumbo lumps.
You know, I've experienced your quality. I've experienced your attention to detail, and I've also experienced your passion. And certainly after meeting Frank Randall, I would want you to be my supplier. I'm sure that that's true. So what kind of challenge is that for you? Do you have to say, okay, I only have so much production I can do, and I have a couple of clients that really take the majority? Is that what you're working with, or is it like every day a new day?
No, actually, what I'm doing now, because I'm really looking to the future for the next generation, we're ready. We have a lot of capacity in the plant. We have a knowledge of the fisheries. We're just looking for the end users like yourself that want to add us to their team. Once they do, we pair up and we go source. We don't really overproduce. We do only what we need to do. I don't know if you call that sustainability, you know, but we just sort of fell into that groove, and we just seek out our people, find us from time to time. And but we're at that point now where we want to just partner up with people that realize that the difference in having that quality coming down back door.
Frank, as I sit and kind of listen and watch and observe in the seafood board meetings, the seafood promotion and marketing board meetings, y'all are constantly talking about the Louisiana certified on seafood. And John and I were talking about that just a little bit earlier. Are you finding in your business that more and more folks are searching for that point of origin, and they are asking specifically for Louisiana seafood?
Well, in my area, yes and no. You know, the difference in my area is you can tell the difference between a product that didn't come out of the Louisiana waters. The clientele can, you know, the Cajuns can. But I think the certified program is a great program, but it's a little bit flawed in that it's not totally engaged. And John and I both are working on that. But as soon as we get all the elements to work, it's going to be a great program, because the fisheries of Louisiana by far produce the best quality that you're going to find anywhere in the United States. But we already know that here, but we just have to reinforce that to the public.
Well, I think you're right, and I think you're a great, great find for the Louisiana Seafood Promotion and Marketing Board. You know the industry. You're a leader. You're a tremendous ambassador for Louisiana. And in closing today, I want to tell everyone, Frank's restaurant, Randall's, all of the information will be on our website so that you can access his company, you can access his business. And at the same time, I want to apologize to you, Frank, for running you all over Louisiana trying to service me with soft-shell crab. But I can assure the public that no matter how difficult it was, you delivered. So I apologize, and at the same time, thank you so much. I'm going to just try to make it easier, because the quality of what you give is absolutely immeasurable and unbelievably good. So thanks for being with us today. Thanks for being a good friend. And again, happy belated birthday and now anniversary. So you can go take care of the important things in your life right now. We just appreciate you being with us today.
Aye, laissez-les bon temps rouler.
Merci beaucoup. Y'all, we're going to be back in just a minute. Thanks to Frank Randall.
Just a big old crab in a barrel, yeah. Trying to keep a brother in his place. Yes, y'all. Y'all just crabs in a barrel.
Hello, I'm Georges Collinet. Join me this week for fabulous vintage recordings from back in the day. Oumou Sangaré, Abdelgadir Salim, Los Van Van, Samba Mapangala, and others. That's next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we've got the Bow Keys at the 2012 Memphis in May Bill Street Music Festival. Then we'll head to Helena, Arkansas for the King Biscuit Blues Fest and hear from Big Bill Morganfield. That, plus our feature host, the late Jerry Wexler, will have an on-the-record series from the Bill Street Caravan Vault. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Francomix avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
Together and individually, they have been a creative and innovative force. The Brennans, the Fishers, the O'Donnells, the Cunninghams, and many more musical families. On the Thistle and Shamrock, hear how they have changed the sound of Celtic music.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
T'as des misères à réveiller le dimanche matin? Mais allume la radio avec moi, Louis Michaud, tous les dimanches matins, 7h jusqu'à 9h. On va charrer en français, écouter la musique en français et boire une petite tasse de café. Join me, Louis Michaud, if you have trouble waking up in the Sunday mornings. Just turn your radio to KRVS from 7 to 9 and hear me with Le Réveil, The Awakening en français.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and on the web at krvs.org. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Crash. They pull each other down. Crash. They're black, white, yellow, brown. Crash. I won't give you what you need.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best-tasting food and culture show on radio, and we just proved it by having our buddy Frank Randall of Randall's Seafood in Lafayette, and, of course, what a great guy he is, and a member of the legislative member, in fact, of the Louisiana Seafood Promotion and Marketing Board Challenge with marketing and promoting all things good about Louisiana species out of the Gulf and fresh water. So if it's crab, if it's crawfish, if it's alligator, if it's oysters, if it's fin fish, or whatever it is, he's on top of it.
He's on it.
He's on it right now. So, Michelle, what about any books on the subject that we should think about when we're talking
yes,
about
indeed.
Crabs?
Well, the first book I want to recommend is probably the best book you could find on Louisiana crabs. This book is called The Louisiana Seafood Bible, and the subtitle is Crabs, because
that's Gerald's book.
That's right. Gerald and Glenda Horst, they're a husband and wife author team, and they've done a series on Louisiana seafood. So they have this book on crabs. They have one on oysters, another on crawfish, another on shrimp, another on fish. This is a very comprehensive look at the crab industry here in Louisiana. It talks about a short history of the blue crab fishery. I love that they include pictures of crabbing in the Gulf, and they also include these great signs that you see along the highway, fresh crab meat and picked crab meat and all that, because that is part of our culture.
Well, it's a great book, and I tell you, he's, you know, working at LSU, I mean, he's done such a fantastic job of he and his wife of putting together books that are really strategically focusing on particular parts of the industry. And that book on crab right there, it's a go-to for us. I mean, if we want to know something about crab, first thing when somebody asked me the other day about crab, I said, go get Gerald's book. It's right in there. Just look at the one that says crab on the cover, and that's the one you have in your hand. It's a great book.
It is. And the first half is all about the history of crabs. The second half of the book is recipes. So after you get the catch, you can prepare it. Crab Louie, crab and shrimp stew. The second book I'd like to recommend is by Judith Weiss, and it's called Walking Sideways. It's a great book for all those who are interested in the 7,000 species of this amazing crustacean we call the crab. The author kind of gives us a tour of the world of crabs, their unique biology, habitats, reproduction, development, natural history. As professor of biological sciences at Rutgers and former president of the American Institute of Biological Sciences, Judith impresses upon us the urgent need to conserve the marine environment and its inhabitants, something that we're all very aware of here in Louisiana. So both are really good books. The first by Gerald and Glenda Horst, the second, Walking Sideways by Judith Weiss. We'll have all information on these books on our website, great additions to your culture and culinary library.
Yeah, ladies, white, they're good cooks. I can see that already.
Yes, indeed.
I might have to give you all a recipe out of here, Nika. He's got some beautiful dishes. While I'm thumbing through the book, Slama, what about our Facebook page? Anything going on? Oh, and I got a surprise for you. You know our heritage hogs?
Yeah, I heard about these things.
Yeah, well, we went to market. And we took the three heritage hogs. We took our large black, which when I got was 100 pounds. It was 350 when I harvested 4 months later.
Oh, goodness.
We took our Berkshire from England, and it was 100 pounds, and we harvested it at 275. And then we harvested our Osabaw, the Spanish hog from the St. Augustine area that went to Osabaw Island, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And that's the rarest of the hogs. And that's where the Iberico ham comes from. That sells for about $800 a leg. Anyway, we raised one of those, and I'm going to put pictures of the meat. The meat is phenomenal on these pigs, and it's all about how you feed them. And, of course, these talk about sustainable. These are pigs that are raised humanely, treated wonderfully, fed great fruit. The first thing is to respect the animal, and we had tremendous respect for the animals.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We fed
almost
we,
too much respect at the end.
Well they were they were on constant feed, so they never had to go look for food. That we served them whey from the cheese factory, which they love the protein of whey, just that liquid. Just love it. We fed them fruits and vegetables twice a week. We fed them acorns, and then, of course, industrial feed. But by the time they got to the market, fact is the slaughterhouse in Eunice that does our meat said, my God, this is some of the most gorgeous. Fact is, Andy Thibodeau, the butcher there who does the butchering, he said, Chef, I don't know what you did with those hogs, but he said, let me tell you something. They were very happy.
Oh, boy.
I say we raised them very happy. But anyway, now they're going to Restaurant Revolution, where we're going to be serving. In fact, we're serving Osabaw chops this weekend. Huh?
And that's where folks can access them. I mean, it's not like they're going into grocery stores or retail markets.
Not yet. Not yet.
I guess the hog herd is growing.
It's coming.
We're only going to raise two or three of the heritage breeds a year, which means they're handpicked for their quality and they're coming from that same original strain. Like the Osabaws, these are the ones the Spanish brought here in the 1500s. I mean, these are original stock, and they're treated real humanely. And, of course, then we harvest them, and for a purpose, the large black is being done for the charcuterie program, our salamis and pastramis and all of these types of meats. And then, of course, the Osabaw is done for the hams, and the Berkshire for the chops. So every one of them has a purpose, and it's going into a very particular part of our restaurant dining experience, so that chef-raised, prepared properly, and then, of course, the public has access to it at Revolution in New Orleans.
So are y'all smoking any of the
Well, I'm smoking. I'm curing four large hams right now. I'm doing four sugar-cured hams. One of our butchers in New Orleans are going to be doing two prosciuttos with the Osabaws. And then we're doing all of, like I say, the pastramas, the mortadellas, we're doing the lardons, all of the things that go into the salumi program.
Are each of those smoked?
Oh, well, no. We're going to do andouilles, smoked sausage.
Okay.
I'm smoking the hams, which we're going to bring to 165 degrees and smoke them until over cherry and pear wood.
Ooh.
Cherry and pear wood. We're going to smoke them until internal temperature of 165, which is going to take us about 36 hours, and then those hams will be available at Revolution during the Thanksgiving and Christmas season. But we'll have them hanging there in our salumi cases so that they'll be wrapped in cane syrup and black pepper on the outside. They're going to be really beautiful piece of meat. So we're going to raise two crops of pigs a year, and now we're just trying to find out what pigs are we actually going to raise for our charcuterie program at Restaurant Revolution. So anyway, y'all stay tuned. That's going to be in. So Slama, we need to load up a picture. I showed you the Osabaw rack today. That nice.
Nice marbled meat.
Oh, marbled meat is right. So what else you got on the website there on our Facebook page?
Facebook.com/stirringitupradio, and that's without a G. And what we're doing is, you know, that's the public discourse. That's where we have the discussion about the show. And we're letting our stovehounds come on in and let us know what they'd like to hear on the radio.
Well, I put some pictures up of the first testing of the smoking of the house, and now the next thing we're going to do is the hams, and we're going to do about I'll do about 500 pounds of andouille because of the butchers are doing that today, so that we can get it ready for Monday to go into the smokehouse, right?
Hmm? You excited about that?
Huh? I'm very excited about it. Absolutely. I bet you're going to be excited, too.
Oh, I will.
But, yeah, that's our public forum. So we encourage our stovehounds to come on by, like us on Facebook, and contribute to the discussion. So anything you'd like to hear, come on by. That's the place for it. But also, we have our archive website that we're just modifying and getting up there on our website, jfolse.com. You can check that out and just click on the radio button on the sidebar, and then that'll bring up our little radio show web page. And on there, I believe on the menu on that web page, we have an archive button. You can click on that, and you can listen to all our podcasts of past shows that are indexed by both guest and subject matter. So if there's something that you feel like you missed out on a past show, or maybe there's a guest that you just can't get enough of.
You know, also, we're very interested in knowing what you want to hear, too, because, I mean, a lot of our guests will send us a little note and say, you know, why don't y'all do something on soft shell crab? And, of course, you have the show today, right?
That's right.
Thinking of a couple recipes here. I think I'm going to do the pan sauteed stuffed soft shell crab. What do you think?
Stuffed?
Yes, yeah, stuffed a soft shell crab.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think? Huh?
How
you like that,
good.
Slama? You eat soft shell crab?
Yeah, I could do that.
Well, you know, y'all, when stuffing softshell crab, I always look first and foremost for the females, even though they're difficult to get, because most of the female crabs are going to the Asian market. They pay a much bigger price for it at Asian restaurants. But fortunately, I should say, I have some access. I have access. So anyway, I always look for the female of the species. They not only have that wonderful flavor, but they're usually full of that rich roe. And, of course, when you make she crab soup, you always put that orange roe of the eggs of the crab into the soup. And I like to do that in my stuffed softshell crab as well. And so the ingredients for stuffing, and by the way, this is going to be on our website. As always, when you go to Starting It Up Radio and you click into
Guessing Goodies.
See, facts and figures, guessing goodies, you know. But anyway, you go there, you're going to find this recipe and everything else we talked about today. The ingredient for the stuffing, Michelle, now I'm starting here with some soft shell crab. I'm using 8 soft shell crab.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to stuff the 8 soft shell crab, I need 1 pound of jumbo lump crab meat. Now, the crab's already full of crab meat, right? But I'm going to stuff them with 1 pound of jumbo lump that's been picked nice and clean.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to go ahead in a saute pan. I'm going to put about an eighth of a pound of butter, you know, about a half cup. Then I'm going to saute 1/2 cup each of diced onions, diced celery, diced red bell pepper, always to put that little color in there. I like orange and yellow bell peppers too. 1/4 cup of minced garlic. I always cheat on garlic. I like a little extra. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I do too.
I like to infuse that butter with my garlic first before I even add my onion, celery, bell peppers in there. Then I add 1/4 cup of thinly sliced, just the green tops of the green onions, and I kind of saute all of that around nice and neat. And then I put it into a bowl and kind of cool it for a little while where the butter and the onions and all that seasoning mix come together. Then I cool it slightly in that big glass bowl. And to that I add, let me say I add about 1/2 cup of an extra heavy-duty mayonnaise. I add 1 egg that is beaten to that, 2 tablespoons of parsley, 2 teaspoons of Worcestershire sauce, 2 teaspoons of lemon juice, 1/2 teaspoon of that Old Bay seasoning. That's that Chesapeake Bay seasoning you see in the store.
Yeah.
1 teaspoon of Creole mustard. And I mix all of that together. So I have my seasonings that's been sauteed in butter, my onion, celery, bell pepper, garlic. Then I added my green onions. Then I added my mayonnaise, my egg, my parsley, Worcestershire, lemon juice, Old Bay, Creole mustard. I stir all of that together. Now I have like a dressing. I have like a nice seasoned dressing. Think of that mayonnaise and egg and all that mixing together. Then I add my lump crab meat to it, and I stir that in with a fork so I'm not breaking them all up. And then I season them to taste using salt, pepper, granulated garlic. And then, Michelle, just enough seasoned Italian breadcrumbs to hold it together. Not as much as I would put in a crab cake, even though I don't put much in a crab cake.
Right.
I want just enough to kind of pick up that liquid.
Mm-hmm.
Then into that, y'all, I'm going to take my 8 whaler softshell crab.
Whaler.
Whaler. That's 6 inches point to point.
And what then, is a buster?
Well, a buster is a softshell crab that is a hard shell crab that's busting open.
Oh, it doesn't have anything
a lot
to do
of times
size?
They refer to little tiny soft shells as buster crabs, but buster crabs are really those that are going into soft shell. They're busting out of their shell.
So a whaler is a buster.
Well, a whaler is a buster, yeah. But a whaler is also the largest of the soft shell crabs, because soft shell crabs molt, you know, about, I don't know, somebody said about 20 times in their lifetime.
Wow.
Because, but every time they grow too fat and too big for their shell, they break out of it and create a new shell. So you catch them during that 8 hours where that shell is butter soft, and then you got to chill them down right away to keep that shell from getting hard when they redeposit the calcium in. That's what makes a soft shell crab. Redepositing the calcium then makes the shell hard within 8 hours, and then they go back out for another season, and mm-hmm. You know, that's how it's done. Kind of like I do with my clothes, you know. Anyway, y'all, so now I take the soft shell crab and I clean them, and I give you a good thing here about how to clean them, you know, lifting up the points of the crab, removing the lungs, or we call the dead men in Louisiana. We clean that crab really nicely, and when the shell is pulled up from the point on each end, there's a little pocket on each side that normally is kind of full of fat. That's where I take the crab stuffing, mm-hmm. and I make a little ball about the size of a golf ball, and I kind of stick it into that pointed corner of the crab underneath, and then I push it back down, and I do that on each side, so now the crab looks like it has two humps on each side of its shell, which it does, because that crab ball stuffing is underneath there, and it's kind of held in place by tucking it in to that little pocket on the inside of the point of the shell on each side. And then, of course, I do that with all of the crabs. And then I go, just kind of dust them in corn flour that's been seasoned. You can use flour, too. But I do a corn flour seasoned with salt, pepper, and a little bit granulated garlic again, maybe a little touch of paprika. Now, you can deep fry them at this point if you want to, or you can saute them. And if you're going to saute them, then you want to kind of dip them in a little skim milk, let's say, and then into the corn flour and put them in a skillet with about a half a cup of vegetable oil that's almost smoking temperature. And then you're going to put the crab in there shell side down. So you're cooking that stuffing first and let it sit there for a little bit. Then you flip it over. Doesn't take long, y'all. It only takes 2 or 3 minutes to cook that crab because it's so delicate and delicious. The recipe is on the website. Go eat some crab and tell Frank Randall I said hello if you go to the dance hall.